session number 1194, reel 3.
Reel 3. Yes, you were going to tell me about your knowledge of the so-called Great Escape. Why is it called Great Escape?
Well, because 50 got away, I suppose, and 50 got out anyway. And I suppose, compared with the wooden horse, it was a great escape. And it was more known because there were more chaps in the camp, not like the one in Poland where 50 got out. They were already captured, except two in Poland. I think two were killed and never heard any more about. But the Great Escape was very difficult because they shot 50 people deliberately. And that was terrible. The escape was, this was a brilliant job. This was really an engineering feat. And they had bellows and God knows what for ventilation. But I used to get information for the chaps about the local travelling facilities and, how long does it take to get home, old boy? Where do you live, you know? And so I said, what do you, the bus? No, I walk to so-and-so and I get the, oh, really? God, I said, oh, it doesn't take you long, you know, and sort of chivvy them up a bit. And I was putting all that into the pot. And always I could make the German caps. They were the ear flaps, you know, that come down the back. I used to make those out of blankets. I made God knows how many of those. And I made rough maps from what the Germans got me, because they got proper maps. They could transfer my detail onto theirs. But it went on very, very well organized, and we had marvelous systems, a system for keeping the diversion going. And of course, chaps used to have these sandbags again. You tie them to your braces, your belt inside. You have them hang down inside. Try to walk around the perimeter and scatter sand as you went along. And anyway, the day of the escape was really quite extraordinary. And when they discovered it, there was terrific tension.
Could you tell me about the escape, what you knew of it, when it was happening?
Well, all I knew that when it was on, because one of my friends, Don Blue, who was here a few weeks ago, he was one of the last to get out before there was run, but he was waiting in the waiting room down below, but he had to come back into the camp.
I was wondering how they got so many out, you know, how they were assembled. How was it arranged?
Well, they had waiting rooms down below. If you read The Great Escape, it's very well detailed in that. I tell you what is an absolute nonsense, that stupid film. It was absolutely spot on, that crazy American on a motorbike, of all damn silly things. I mean, they couldn't have done that, because it was as flat as a billiard table. There were no hills, and it really made me sick. It was a beautiful story, and it had this clot going round, and he was a great hero. God, he didn't exist, you know. And he was talking about the Phantom of the Opera.
But I was wondering, you know, you being sort of in the prison of the day of the escape, what you actually heard and saw?
You heard
about
nothing.
The events.
You heard nothing, but tremendous tension. And we all kept very quiet. We didn't. I mean, it was too big a thing to talk about. And till it was all over, then. But what was so awful was to see some of our chaps recaptured, see them in the four lager. Bad luck, old boy, you know, and waves, and they wave back, and thumbs up. And then, a few days later, the German taking the parade, will you ask the officer stand to for a moment? I have an announcement. Then he read out, we have some bad news. I will read you a list of officers from the perhaps he called it the Great Escape, I don't know, who have been shot resisting recapture. Well, we knew damn well they hadn't resisted recapture. There no fellow would. And when you were someone's arm, what could you do? No, they'd been, they just took them out and they gave them the gnick shoes to the back of the neck. Oh, and when we stood there, and I've never known such silence. You're gripped with anger, revulsion, and vile hatred. I mean, the Germans are cringing. I mean, they could feel it. We knew there was a sound, but they were sort of cowed, and they went up for their tails between their legs. And it was, oh, it was such an emotional occasion. And those poor devils, you know, they were, you know, Roger Bushell, what a great character he was. Lovely chaps.
Was he quite a prominent escaper? You know, what is about Robert Bushell?
Well, Roger, he was, he's a ski champion and a great athlete. And he was on the list to be shot because he made other attempts. And they said if he got out again, he would be shot. But he was such a tower of strength, you know. We had him in Poland as well. He was a bloody nice bloke, he really was.
Was it bad for morale when that happened?
Oh, well, no. I think it made us even more determined. Yeah, see that out. And then I've made some notes there for you. But, I mean, when we got awkward Germans, I mean, although we were the being kicked around and all that sort of thing, you may have a greater trust in Hitler than we have. There may come a day when your name might be on the blacklist, you know, and we let it be known. But it was so funny that we, when we were leaving to go on the winter march, there was an Oberfeldwebel, Stuhlmeier, his name, and he'd always been quite nice to us. And ich werde sie niemals schikanieren. I never take the Mickey out of you. And he was always so helpful to the limit of his capacity. But when the winter march came, he was firing his pistol. He went berserk. He went nuts. They're all the same, these Germans, they get to a certain point. They're like a light switch, they're on or off. They really are. And my son is working for some Germans. I helped them when they were refugees. And I, knowing the German mentality, I can see see this in them at times, that the way their eyes glint, but they're civilized because they've been here many years. But it's an extraordinary race of people.
Could I ask you now, because I think it's important, you know, all this time you were inside, did you get real news of what was going on in the war?
Oh, Lord, yes. We had a secret radio. There was, what's his name, the Diamond Skulls winner. Oh, golly. He was Thames waterwayman, Lou Barry. And Lou was one of the German universities, and he spoke a sort of dog German, you know, awful German. And he was a great character. He was a commissioned air gunner. One or two chaps came in, not quite my age, but near enough, came in, you know, as the war progressed. And because he was a commissioned air gunner. And old Lou, he knew all the rackets and things and that, and he got bits and pieces and assembled the secret radio. And I had a pair of scissors, a little pair of scissors given to me when I was up in Sheffield once, little pocket ones, little leather thing. And I was cutting a wire from the ceiling. We used to switch off at 4 o'clock, until 4 o'clock, I mean, in the winter, and I was up on the in this hut, 10 powers on. It was a little burn-in. I did a back somersault off Lou's table. I'll never forget that. I lost them, unfortunately. They were a wonderful souvenir. But he was a great character, and he used to speak this awful dog German to him, but I understood him, and I used to laugh. It was sort of, I suppose, Cockney version of German. And,
but you got the news, did you?
Oh, we got the news regularly. I remember listening to old Churchill making one of his speeches, because I used to do, you know, on the security side. I used to get bits of info and bring it in, and because I was privileged to have a little listening sometime. I remember old Churchill listening to part of his speech, tears running up my eye, you know. Incredible. No, we had... it was a bit tricky to not to give ourselves away sometimes, and we had all kinds of nicknames for you know, for the different aspects of news, and we used to have a bulletin used to come round. We were not written down as verbal. We used to come round, and chap used to come into each hut and just to give the headlines. It was quite good that. There were some very bright chaps working on that. I can't think of all their names now. But what else do you want to know?
Well, I was wondering, you know, as the war was going on, were you experiencing any of the raids? You know, the...
Oh, Lord, yes. We see the Americans go over the daylight. See them going over in hordes, and then you see the Messerschmitt come up, want to be picked off, and come down. They go on and on and on. And you know, that was quite incredible. Yeah, quite incredible.
Did you ever suffer that from a raid bombing yourself?
Yes. We were machine gunned. That was at that was late on. There was when we were at Luckenwalde before the Russians came in. We were shot up once or twice. We were right in the middle of the. Of the Battle of Berlin, you know, the sort of aftermath of that, because they retreated from Berlin and from the east and all around our camp, and I was on the gates, and there were two gates, and well, three, but two that were used, and there were Germans one side and Russia. It's quite extraordinary.
This was at the end of the
war. Yeah,
March,
yeah, quite extraordinary. Yeah.
Yes, yes. I was wondering, you know, regarding news, when you began to feel that the tide had changed in the war.
Well, I think the winter march was the that we began. Yes, that was the you know, you knew something going on then.
This was from Stalagluft 3, wasn't it?
That's right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
What date would that have been?
It was in February. I can't remember the date. I've written some details about that for you.
Yes, Feb 45 would it be?
It was Feb 45. Yes. And as I say, I've been in sick bay for 3 months with this wretched septic throat. I told you they brought an abscess on their hand, foot, or throat. I was in the hut there with a padre Humphrey. God almighty, he thought he got the stigmata, he got it on his foot. And he was doing the praying and doing a King Jack and all that nonsense. I don't know if I would tell you what I called him. But that little padre, Spanger, what a difference, you know.
But this long march, you know, you'd been in sick bay, did you still have to go on it?
Oh, yes, oh, I just got back to my hut and it was... and. Well, we got back with my mates. I mean, it was part of it. I flaked out when I got to the other end. Oh, the end of it was terrible.
Yes, could you describe the long march to me? You know, how many would have been involved and whether you were
I think we were. We were dispersed. And there were about 1,200 of us to in my party, I think. And we went off. Had a... remember the actual dates, because it was a bit of a jolt to me coming, so I had a sick bay. I came out at 9 o'clock that morning, and the same evening to be hustled off in about 40 degrees of frost. And the extraordinary part, we we made rough sledges out of bed boards and things, and we're trailing along, and it was like a tunnel. There was white snow and this sort of white mist. It was like going through a white tube. And suddenly, after we'd been going for a couple of hours, I suppose, with a tinkle, tinkle, we were surrounded by Cossacks on little ponies. Their hands were tucked up in their sleeves, and they were riding with their knees. And there were these bandolier things down their front and the Astrakhan caps. And we were speculating at first whether it might have been a recce of the Russians, you know, got ahead. We didn't know how far the war was going, they were very near. anyway, it turned out, when we saw the skull and crossbones, we knew that they were SS, they were German. And the guards were mostly old chaps, they were terrified, as we were. We didn't know what they were going to do, they seemed so vicious-looking. Anyway, honour was redeemed, and we wandered on. That was a thing. Then another time, I don't know whether it was
the first time you knew about Russians fighting with the Germans?
Oh, no. We knew that because we had Russian prisoners joining us, and they used to come in, these poor devils, they used to just work them till they died, come and use our showers, at Warburg particularly. They'd come in, they're like skeletons. Every time they moved, they carried everything they possessed with them. They'd know where they were going back to the camp again, and four or five would die every time they came in to be delouched because of the shock. Anyway,
did they have a worse time than other prisoners?
Oh, God, yes, rather, yes. And the Russians did, and of course the Germans weren't very friendly at all. Russian prisoners, I don't think. The other Russians weren't very friendly towards the German prisoners. But I know of one case, it was told me by a German, where he'd been badly wounded in the guts, and he was one of the guards up on the East Front, and he said they marched in this village one night, and they were women all greeted them there. No men at all greeted them. Come in and get round the fire and so on. He said just a small party of Germans, and during the night the women poured boiling water over their faces. And he said that was to be remembered. Another time he said they couldn't understand, they were in this position, they were miles from anywhere, and yet chaps getting picked off. And there was no one around anyway, there was a derelict Russian tank. And they suddenly decided to go and look at that. And there was a Russian, his stomach was all blown open, and his hand had annealed itself to his stomach. And he was loading this rifle and firing, and he was emaciated, but he was still going on. Incredible. Anyway, where do I get to?
We were talking about the Cossacks, surrounding you. Yes. Was that quite a fright when you saw
the Well, it was. I mean, in the quietness, and, you know, see all these people and horses in snow. You know.
And were they threatening towards you?
Well, they didn't know. Yes, they were. They were a little bit... Well, everybody was frightened about everything else. Anyway, I think it was then we marched on. We came to a barn. I think it's probably the best night ever spent up in the hayloft there on the hay. It was super. And then we spent a night in a school. But the most fantastic thing of all was Moscow, Moskau, glass factory. And we all peeled off, all running around absolutely starkers, trying to dry our clothes and brew up and cook something. And there were rows and rows of moulds and things for shaping the glass in with these racks in there. And we were trying to find somewhere to keep down. It was quite incredible. Well, another thing there, the Aussies, I couldn't believe it. These farmer chaps, they were educated chaps too, you know, they were Air Force officers, and they were quite skilled in every damn thing. They, with the prospect of a thaw, they even made little carts with wheels and hubs and shod them with tiles. They found a blacksmith's shop and a carpenter's shop in this glasswork, and they worked all night. They made three or four little carts. Quite incredible. Anyway, we went on and on. And then we eventually got in the Luckenwalde area, and we were marched into a hut. It was a long hut, and there were doors at the side at each end, not on the gable end, but on each side, double doors, and we were marched in there. It was a big wide, it was about, I suppose, 20 feet wide, covered in coconut matting, and opposite the gable end in the middle were double doors into the hall proper. So we're going to be deloused. So get undressed. So we got undressed. Hope this all went in. And it looked like a shallow pool. There was a walk all round the bath. Thank you. About 10 feet wide. And there was a step down of about 2 feet, this rectangle in the middle, and rows and rows of nozzles over, you know, so we didn't take much notice of that. We just walked in and stepped down and stood waiting, 200 or 300 under a nozzle. We looked around, there weren't any drains. So we didn't panic, we just kept our cool. And there was a wooden form, and underneath a window, which is about 8 feet up, and it's about 2 feet deep, and almost the length of the hall, glass. And so we, amongst ourselves, the tallest of us, said we would break the window with a form, and, you know, it could take some holding, and as many could scramble up, because if they could stand on the top, then they could get through and, you know, if they survived outside. Anyway, we were getting more and more anxious as time wore on. Anyway, about 2 hours later, they came and let us out. We put on our clothes and we went to the camp proper. And when we got there...
Before you go to the camp, what did you think this place was?
A gas chamber. It couldn't be anything else, could it?
Did you know at that time that they were gassing?
Oh, yes, yes. And that's why we tweaked it. I mean, where's the water going? They're going to fill that damn thing up and drown us. No, Now, I was reminded of that, 3 years ago, I'd forgotten all about it, you know, because it was all such a drastic... I tell you another thing that was so wonderful when we got to Luckenwalde. The Germans were still holding on to Norway and trying to placate the Norwegians not to cause too much ruction there. And so they allowed a food wagon to come in. Huge thing it was, filled with butter and cheese and lovely stuff. Do you know the Norwegians gave it to us? It was bloody marvellous, wasn't it? And,
were there Norwegian people there then?
Norwegian
well?
Officers, yes. Marvellous, it really was. And, God, we're in a terrible state.
And were you really? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I weighed 6 stone, all my clothes on when I came home. And I'm overweight now because I'm an old man. But I was boxing and rowing at 14 stone, 14 and a half stone. And that was when I was captured. We went in there and there'd been some Russians there, and they'd gone. We wandered into what had been the Russian section. And we were on four-tier bunks with brick floors, rats and lice and everything there. And I was very ill. I flaked out. I cut my chin. I felt, you know, fainted when I got there. And I was on the bottom bunk because I couldn't climb any higher. And I watched there was a rod going across on the roof, and we were hanging our bags over any little bits of food away from the rats. So rats somehow got up the wall and were going along, climbing down and eating. Quite incredible. Anyway, when I felt a bit better, I went into where the Russians had been, And they'd been sleeping on the floor, on the brick floor, all wet. The rags and muck there. And they were decomposing corpses where they hadn't declared that they died because they'd have knocked them off their rations a bit more. I mean, it was... They kept one hut clear, in spite of all their crowding, to make into a church. And you couldn't believe it. The all made of cardboard. I've got a picture I'll show in a minute. All made of cardboard and beautiful painting, all the lovely stained glass effects and all the marble effects. And Hitler even had the humbug to allow some Greek Orthodox bloke to go down there, and there was a plaque in front. Can you believe the humbug? While I was there, there were some Americans in another hut, and I was terribly poorly, and I'd been allowed to keep my watch, and to try and keep my sanity, I was trying to teach some Americans German, you see, so... just before I went across, about a quarter of an hour before I walked across, there was a lousy day, and in came Max Schmeling, the boxer. He'd been world champion or European champion. I'd seen him box here in Brighton, and he came in civvies with two blokes, a captain and a major in the SS troops. He's terrified of flying, but they made out he was a paratroop. He wasn't. He was just a humbug, but he was a leading figure. "Hello, English boys. I'm Max Schmeling, the boxer. Get stuffed, you bloody Nazi bastard." So he went out with his tongue between his legs, you see. About a quarter of an hour later, I went across the American huts, and I was up on the foredeck, a bit of bunk there. They dragged me out there, and I was sitting in this corner with these three chaps. And "Hello, American boys, I'm Max Spencer, the boxer." "Gee, Maxie boy, give us your autograph. A little stubs of pencil, a bit of paper, you know, the difference. That sums up the Americans. I've summed up the Germans, that sums up the Americans." Extraordinary notoriety.